Was that a short introduction or what? Free Radio Santa Cruz 96.3 proudly presents Bath Robespierre's Broadside, Civil Rights for the Poor, and you will be the richer for it. I'm your host, Bath Robespierre Robert Norse. The next 2 hours, we're going to be talking about homeless rights, rights of people who are poor, your rights, and what we need to get those rights reestablished so that people actually have them. Stay with us, and you will be able to be a part of this process. How do you do it? Well, you use your telephone if you have one, or perhaps invest 35 cents if you don't. We're going to begin by going back to the last exercise in, I don't know if we'd call it democracy, but City Council has meetings every second and fourth Tuesday. Actually, they've been having them every week this month. But the regular meetings are second and fourth Tuesday, and they had a regular meeting last Tuesday, which the issue of the big issue was borders. But there were other issues, too, and to get some handle on those issues, we turned to our roving reporter, Scott Graham, to talk about that, and here he is.
We're in the patio area talking to
the mezzanine,
the well-known and much beloved Scott Graham. Scott, were you at the City Council this afternoon?
Hey, where'd you get the groovy new tape deck, Robert?
This is one of my more costly items, all of $29.50. You can pick it up at your local lawn store. Actually, it's a Radio Shack item. But getting back to you, Scott, and your view, were you here this afternoon?
Yes, I was.
And what happened? Anything on the homeless issues task force appointments? We know that.
Yeah, two people were appointed.
And were they present?
One of them was.
Did we learn anything about them? Was Dan Hopkins mentioned, that old-time activist, which apparently Christopher Crone has decided not even to mention for fear of offending Mayor Byers?
No, Dan was there most of the afternoon session, kind of not sleeping in the back row.
Sleeping?
Seemed that way. And then he...
Well, why wasn't Sergeant Vogel arresting Dan Hopkins for sleeping in City Council meeting? That's what I'm wondering.
I think it's okay to sleep that time of day, isn't it?
That's correct, yes.
Well, anyway, he appeared to be sleeping. But anyway, he got up and left for a moment, after he left, they talked about the Homeless Issues Task Force and made two appointments.
I see. So it was merely a coincidence.
I guess. I don't know.
Well, here is Dan Hopkins walking by. Dan, did you leave in order to give Catherine Byers and Chris Crone an opportunity just to pass over your name in silence, given the incredible abuse that you have visited upon this City Council, which cares more about homeless people than in any City Council
Well, the one thing that really got me was when all these people were up there speaking. I know this is not about homelessness, but about the Santa Cruz Five.
We're talking about this evening's City Council. Actually, yeah. Scott here was talking about this afternoon's City Council.
Oh, that was terrible. I couldn't believe it. It was just like, you know, I hate to say this, the council doesn't like me anymore anyway, so I may as well say what I said in the council meeting to a friend of mine, was this is like a den of snakes. These City Council people are a den of snakes.
Well, what about them that you find snake-like?
Well, they're going to take this guy's business away from him, and they said they don't have to give him no relocation fees, they go through all these legalities. This woman that represents the city says, we don't have to give no fees, no moving fees, no nothing. And this guy had people come up that just only were his customers in the last week or so, right? And one of them was a woman who had a sick child, and she was afraid that her kid was going to get sick during the night, and she wouldn't have transportation to take the child to the hospital.
What does this have to do with the guy's business?
Yeah, because this guy rents cars, and he rents them to people without credit cards, without deposits, for
$20
a day.
Oh, that's the wrong kind of person we want.
Yeah, another girl was getting a job, and she had to have a car to get there, and if she didn't get the car to go there, she could check everywhere in town. There's no way she could afford it, and he gave her the rental of the car for $20.
The guy is helping the wrong sort of people.
So she got the job. And then it was numerous examples of this, and by the time we were finished, there was no way that anyone could say this guy wasn't a good-hearted person. He was a young person. He also worked his way up in 6 years from being homeless to having this business.
What's the name of this person?
Kevin or Kenneth Clark, I think his last name was. Do you remember this guy?
And
he's on Front Street, on the corner of Front and Laurel, in that car lot. And you know, they leased it to him like that. It's not his fault that lot looks bad with that old building on it, right? But then that's what they use. And then Councilman Hernandez tried to say, wasn't there a sexual assault on your property? And he says, no, it was in the back of the property, and I'm the one who called the police on it. I'm the one who called on the drug addicts that are down there, you know, selling drugs and stuff behind there. And Hernandez tried to build a case against him on his property. He says, well, I see people going in and out of your place all the time. Are they buying cars? And he says, yeah, most of them are buying cars, or they're renting cars from me. And Hernandez just put this awful, awful black plague on this guy. I mean, this guy's a really good-hearted person. He's a fairly young person. And it's just unbelievable what the city council and the law and the ordinance in this town can do to a person. They're going to take that person's business away, and he's not going to be able to relocate, because it's impossible to relocate a business like that somewhere in Santa Cruz. They're saying, well, maybe we'll find something on Ocean Street where he can put all those cars.
Well,
it's horrible.
I think the big mistake this guy made was he let Dave the Blade live there. And
you mean Dave the Blade who gave me the finger today as he drove by?
It could be the same guy. And that disaster follows him everywhere. Houses get ruined, condemned, people get thrown out of their living quarters, all because they let Dave the Blade live at their house for a little while.
Well, when did Dave Scott live at this guy's house?
Since he got thrown out of the Frederick Street area, and up until about a week ago, when the city decided to take the land away.
So, what was your impression of all this? Was there a justification for the city's position or not?
Well, they wanted parking. They wanted it as a parking lot.
Well, parking lots are more important than rental for low-income people, wouldn't you say?
Yeah.
Becky, you've been examining this. Did the council vote unanimously on this issue, or you weren't there this afternoon?
No, it wasn't.
No. Okay. What was the vote, Scott?
I think it was unanimous.
So our good council members, Crone and Sugar, decided that cars, in this case, do way more than people. We know that, right?
Well,
sensible. It's common sense.
Cars are cars. You can either have a parking lot full of cars, like it is now, or you can have a parking lot full of cars.
Just the same old thing.
So it's an eyesore.
Well, I think parking lots in general are eyesores.
See, they're not saying anything about him being good-hearted, you know? This guy could have probably already rented these cars out for $40 a day instead of $20 a day, you know? And so they want to take this good-hearted guy out of there and put a parking lot on his corner. And the parking lot would be right next to the river to give it a little more scenery there. Wouldn't it be wonderful to be standing on the levee looking at the water and looking at this huge parking lot all around you, you know? That's what the city has planned for, you know. You want to get this guy out, which is a car lot, doesn't look nearly as bad as it would if there was a bunch of parking lots right there where it's supposed to be like nature and stuff like that in a beautiful looking area, you know. Instead they put a parking lot there.
Any other things happen at the afternoon session, Dan, that struck you?
No, not that much. I didn't stay in there the whole time, but I did stay for that. that really made me mad, you know. But the city council people, they don't care. And that person that recites the laws, it was a woman, I don't know who she is, she recites the laws, oh no, they can't get relocation money and this and that, you know, we're not obligated. And then almost every other council person recites that, well, we don't really have any obligation, but maybe we could help him out. I have to say that Keith Sugar did say he felt that we should do something to help him relocate his business.
But they didn't actually do something.
No. They just reiterated after Keith Sugar said that, that law person reiterated that we're not obligated to do that.
Thank you, Dan. We're going to have you more frequently as our council correspondent.
And that was Dan Hopkins and Scott Graham with a little bit of Becky Johnson and myself at the afternoon session of the Santa Cruz City Council, where indeed two new members of the Homeless Issues Task Force were appointed. Are they a force? Are they a farce? It's hard to tell. I know that this afternoon I was out at their shelter subcommittee, incurable optimist that I am, and they're forwarding a couple of resolutions to the main committee, which, they're not bad resolutions. One of them suggests that there should be rent reduction, not just rent stabilization, but rent reduction. Whoa. But at least rent stabilization. So that's good. We know there's a rent stabilization initiative working its way around the campus. I think it's got until a couple more weeks left before they need to get their 3,900 or 4,000 signatures to put it on the ballot this spring for a vote by the city voters. And it's a really little too moderate an ordinance for my taste, but it talks about a certain form of rent control, rent stabilization, gutted, of course, by the state law, which has allowed landlords to raise their rents once people leave the property. Once the tenant goes, then they can raise them as much as they want, which, of course, destroys the whole idea of rent control, but never mind that. Anyway, this thing should have passed like a month and a half ago, that passed the Homeless Issues Task Force, but for some inexplicable reason, with Sherry Connable's vote, it went back to committee. Well, the committee voted it out, and it'll hopefully be voted past the Homeless Issues Task Force, which doesn't really mean much, except that's one more group that says, let's have some decent rent control. And for those of you who are interested in rent control, and perhaps I can persuade my producer here to try to get in touch with that impresarius of rent control, Donna Dice, who heads the Tenants' Rights Union of Santa Cruz, TRUSC. TRUSC is a group that has been working late nights, Sundays, Mondays, Tuesdays, and Saturdays, too, to get information out to folks who are getting evicted. They have been recently thwarted by new state legislation, or is it local policy? I'm not sure. I think it's state legislation that makes it difficult for them to access what had previously been open records at the county building. So you can't learn that people are getting what are called unlawful detainers or eviction notices until after they receive those notices in the mail, which may be in some cases too late for people to get effective assistance, given the timidity that people feel and the anxiety people feel about that issue. So it's different to have somebody call you on the phone and say, hey, I'm working with a tenants' rights union, you've just been evicted, can I help you? And then have them try to call you later when you're already making plans under which bridge to move. You're tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM. I'm, as I said before, your host, Bathrobes Pierre Robert Norris. Our call-in number, for those of you who want to call in, and we do have open lines, is 427-3772. We're hoping to get a call from Jerry Henry or Richard Quigley. These are the bad boys of Aptos. Actually, pretty good people, in my view. They're advising young people about their rights at the Aptos Rancho Del Mar Shopping Center. And if you're a regular listener to this show, you've heard about a program of police harassment against them that is really remarkable. And apparently that has been resumed, and we're going to hopefully hear from them. Well, here's an incoming call. Perhaps that's the people in question.
Hi, you're on Free Radio Santa Cruz, and you're on the air.
Hi, Robert. I understand this is probably a little off topic, but I did want to get it out there.
Sure.
That in about 15 minutes, there's going to be a massive mobilization of people concerned about the execution date being set for Mumia Abu-Jamal. Of course, yesterday, Governor Tom Ridge, the governor of Pennsylvania, signed Mumia's death warrant, setting an execution date for December 2nd at midnight of this year. And we expect them to carry this through, so we need to take this as a real threat to his life and get as many people in the streets as possible.
Now, didn't I read like a week ago that Ridgeway, is that his name?
Ridge
signed a new warrant, there would still be a whole series of appeals in the federal courts here, or are we?
It's a three-tiered federal process, and yes, that is true. Last 2 weeks ago, I believe, the Supreme Court denied a writ of certiorari, essentially saying that they weren't able to hear the case yet because it hasn't made its way to them through the normal appeals process. So they essentially pushed it back down to the federal district courts. But
they can't execute them until it works its way through the process?
Essentially what their action did was give a green light for Ridge to sign a new death warrant, and this is what he has done yesterday. So
right.
We do take this as a serious threat, and we need to get people in the streets.
Right, I'm not trying to discourage that. I'm just trying to understand the whole situation. This is going to be happening, I see, in the very Free Radio Santa Cruz studio here, there's going to be a town clock rally at 6:30?
That's correct.
And, of course, then there'll be a rally at Palin Market in San Francisco Saturday at noon.
12 noon, and we're going to be having carpools leave from the Rhizone Info Shop at 224A Walnut Street at 9:45 a.m. on Saturday to go up to San Francisco for an even larger demonstration.
Any other comments, Vinny, on events in the last week while we have you on the line?
Concerning Mumia, tomorrow we are told that his legal team will be filing an extensive document. I'm not exactly sure. I'm not real clear on that process, but they're filing it in the federal district courts in Philadelphia, and that will hopefully at least give them a stay of execution, at the very least, until it winds its way through the appeals process.
And Mumia Abu-Jamal, of course, was an African-American who was
jailed and convicted of murder in Philadelphia back in the early 80s for allegedly shooting a police officer, a man named Faulkner.
Right, and there's much testimony that's come out over the years to put it bluntly, he was railroaded. He was denied the opportunity to represent himself in court. He was excluded from, conferences, basically, between the attorneys and the judges when key jurors were removed without his approval. All kinds of police coercion of witnesses, basically threatening witnesses if they testified. If they didn't testify against him, they would be jailed or run out of town or, had physical harm done to them. All the way up to officers lying on the stand about a so-called confession that
now,
they...
Now, wait a minute. Officers lying on the stand?
Yeah, can you imagine that?
Not in Santa Cruz.
This is from the same police department in Philadelphia that had over 100 cases overturned after an extensive FBI investigation into misconduct of the Philadelphia police. The only police department in the nation to ever have the FBI... investigate them.
Mumi Abu-Jamal has his own radio show still, as I understand it, from Death Row, which plays on Free Radio Santa Cruz, right?
Well, he's done a series of commentaries that were, in fact, censored from NPR and from Pacifica, of all places. And they've made CDs and tapes with his commentaries. A lot of these are about 3 minutes long.
KPFA has censored Mumi Abu-Jamal?
In the past, yes. When these originally first came out, they did. They refused to air them. They have retracted that and have done.
Well, Vinny, on another topic, you yourself are a defendant in a pending criminal case regarding police to put you in jail for a protest.
Yeah, honestly, Robert, I would love to get into that, but I got to get going. I got 10 minutes to get to the clock tower.
One last question.
Sure.
Night Watch and Cop Watch. I should say Night Patrol and Cop Watch, the groups trying to observe the police and also stop troll busting. Anything happening with them in the last few days?
I've been advised by my attorneys not to answer this line of questioning at this time.
See, well, thank you very much.
Okay, bye-bye.
Boy, those attorneys are cutting off all our sources. I don't know what to say. goodness. There are also some other things happening now. For those of you who are interested, you can go down to the clock tower and raise a picket sign, or you can go to Beach Flats Housing, a trailer, that is to say, on 200 Raymond Street. It's sort of a trailer parked in the middle of a park in the middle of the Beach Flats, and they are talking about Beach Flats Housing. Why would anyone be interested in Beach Flats Housing? Well, that's one of the poorest neighborhoods in our city, and it's an area where probably the strongest concentration of Hispanic people is, and it's an area that was really key in the election last November that supposedly brought us this wonderful new progressive majority, which seems to be progressing in any but a progressive direction generally, not progressing at all or progressing in the wrong way, though they are trying to do things like keep out chain stores, provided the chain stores have to do with favored merchants. And we could talk about that whole borders controversy, and I think that actually the ordinance that's been proposed by Crone, Rotkin, and Sugar, there's a strange trio, is not a bad one. It's a good one. I think the people should have a level of review when large chain stores move in, national chain stores. It's not a matter of anti-free enterprise. It's a matter of giving the community a say in what happens in their own town, giving them a say in whether they want profits to exit the same door they came in fast, whether they want to have ticky-tacky large chains strip-malling the town, whether they want to have, or whether they want a particular store or not, is really what it boils down to. And that decision can be made in any individual case. So I favor the ordinance, and I'm kind of sorry they didn't pass it, even though I thought that there was something to be said for the arguments of the merchants and the Chamber of Commerce. That's mostly who it was. The pro-chain store people who wanted to, who talked about the need for process and having more discussion time. And, there's something to be said for that, because that was the cry that the current council majority made when they said don't pass the Beach Flats plan or the beach area plan because it's being rushed through. And it was. And so is this proposal. Although, in a way, this proposal is about 10 years late. I mean, they needed to do this before the chains started coming in, whether it be Costco's or Long's or all these other big stores. And I don't think Cinema 9 can really be regarded as a chain, by the way, for those people who say, oh, well, we let Cinema 9 in and it was a wonderful thing, and
upped our business, and aren't we glad? So now let's let in Borders and other stores and forget about regulating them at all. I don't think that's such a hot idea and such a valid argument. So anyway, 6:30 at the Beach Flats, that's where this all came from. There is a meeting on housing, and that's of importance to some of us because for those of you old-timers who've been following this show for a while, I've been concerned about the plan to bulldoze the housing of Hispanic residents in the Beach Flats, whether it's under the Rotkin-Kennedy gang, as was the case last fall when they tried to pass the beach area plan, or whether it's under the new Byers, Fitzmaurice, Rotkin, Matthews gang and what they're planning to do. There was a lot of concern in some quarters about the so-called Dolphin Lee demolition proposals, whereby the Dolphin and Lee apartment buildings, which currently have a lot of Hispanic residents, the same Hispanic residents who came to support the people who won the city council election and say, let us keep our neighborhood, their apartment was going to be razed to the ground, and then they'd get new housing. Well, let's put it this way. Someone would get new housing, whoever could afford it, somewhere down the road. It would cost everybody about $5 million in relocation fees, but there was no guarantee that this housing would be affordable to the people that were actually evicted. So it was another one. It was a sort of a, it struck me as a scam, and I got to admit that I haven't talked it over in detail with Don Lane, so maybe when I talk to Don I can get more details. Though Don said he had nothing to do with this proposal, at least in terms of any kind of job offers, as Phil Baer and Scott Graham have suggested sort of off the record. They think that Don Lane is sort of in a Kennedy camp on this matter, that there is a kind of a Andy Schifrin faction, a Kennedy faction that wants to pass a certain kind of housing, Mercy housing. It's sort of a beach plan redux, and it's a little different. It's a form of they want an affordable housing project somewhere so they can show what great liberals they are, but in so doing they don't mind if they dislocate lots of poor people who currently have some housing and perhaps better housing than they get under the proposed plan. The problem with it is gentrification. That's what you should look for if you go to the 630 Beach Flats housing trailer proposal. And I'm signaling my producer to rush off and try to find the guest who probably isn't going to be there, that we hope that will be on the air. That's actually another subject, but hopefully we'll get this person to come join us. That will be happening, of course, on Free Radio, and you're listening to 96.3 FM. Free Radio Santa Cruz. He's a homeless man who has been around here, and his family has been around here for generations. And he's very articulate. He seems to be a pretty hard-headed guy, commonsensical sort of person. I ran into him at the Homeless Services Center on Monday when there was a kind of a vote taken among a small section of the homeless community, which showed up, as to who they would recommend for the board of directors of the Homeless Services Center, excuse me. The Homeless Services Center is the organization that controls the Coral Street Free Meal, the Interfaith Satellite Shelter Program, and the Community House Project out there, some call it the Homeless Concentration Camp or Ghetto, other call it the Homeless Services Center, where you can get a locker, you can use the phone, get a shower, get your clothes washed, get a meal at 4, and if you're one of the lucky 5%, you can get a place on the church floor at night and be protected from the city's anti-homeless sleeping ban, which prescribes $54 fines for those who sleep outside or cover up with blankets after 11 o'clock at night, but only if you're part of the lucky 5%, because only 5% of the homeless population has any legal shelter at night, even with all the wonderful programs that Mike Rotkin assures us are the best in the business on the coast. So, at the Homeless Services Center, they voted, I guess Mama Joy was the woman who was voted to be the proposed representative, though that still has to be ratified by the assorted gang of cops, merchants, bureaucrats, and Samaritans who are on the board of the Homeless Services Center. Why do I sound so sarcastic about them? Well, because even though Donna Murillo, who is chair of that board, can write a letter saying that they deplore the beatings of homeless people, of which there have been between 25 and 35 since January, even though they deplore them, they say that they do deplore them, they will not recommend that there be any kind of a safe zone set up. They won't open up their homeless services center at night. They won't ask that a park be opened up. They won't do diddly squat. So I think that is very bad news, and I think it really is very typical news considering the upper middle class makeup of these people, who like to preen themselves on their compassionate natures but don't want to take any effective action. And of course, leading this bunch is Mayor Byers, who sits on the board of directors, and sits is the right word. She doesn't do anything. She sits there. In fact, what she does is she obstructs actions that might result in some positive change, like the attempt this spring, or last winter, I should say, to eliminate the sleeping and blanket ban sections of the camping ordinance. More than 3,000 Santa Cruz voters had signed an initiative requesting this be done. Almost every organization that endorsed the three winning candidates, Crone, Fitzmaurice, and Sugar, from SCAN to Women's International League for Peace and Freedom, Community Action Board, I'm not sure if they endorsed them, but they certainly endorsed, they're in the same ideological field. Peace and Freedom Party, Green Party, all these people endorsed these candidates and asked the sleeping ban be ended. And these candidates sold them out, specifically Fitzmaurice. Fitzmaurice and Byers sold them out. And because of their refusal to take action, to stand up for these issues, we have now, I was talking to Karen Brock, a worker at the Homeless Services Center this afternoon. She was outraged at the increase in tickets. She said she got four this week, but she's upset because of the nature of the tickets that people are getting for such things as, I think I even have a taped interview I'm going to play about this today, sitting on a blanket. Call him Tom. That's not his name, but he spoke to me today, right before I spoke to Karen Brock. I was giving her advice on how to fight your ticket, how to fight your sleeping ticket. She's a worker there who's advising homeless people on how to fight their tickets. And if you want help, by the way, give a call to 423-HUFF. Old Tom told me that he was given a ticket by Parks and Rec Rangers in the middle of the day for sitting on a blanket in the Poganip. And the ticket was a camping ticket. So it looks to me like the law enforcement agencies are up to their old, dirty, nasty, scummy tricks. And why do I say this? Because these guys are just following orders and they're just doing their job. They are hurting people. They are putting people in danger. They are denying basic human rights to human beings. That's dirty, that's scummy, that sucks. And I think we all should tell them that whenever we see them doing it, and maybe even just when we see them. I used to feel that way about Byers, and I would announce publicly whenever I saw her downtown, it's sleeping ban Byers, there she goes, because that is how I know her at the present time. The woman who single-handedly kept the sleeping ban and the blanket bans in Santa Cruz. But, hey, they say that we can't change that situation. Well, I don't know about that. Let's listen to Mark Levy and see what he says.
My country said was right. That's when I still believed, like many friends who were deceived. so young and naive, when we got the call to fight. You can't move that train. You can't move that train. You can't move that train without moving my body. You can't move that train. You can't move that train. You can't move that train without moving my body. I was the all-American kid, but all the right things that I did couldn't have prepared me for Vietnam. That's when I began to doubt and question what the war was all about. Counting bodies in the burned out villages keep on. That you can move that train. You can move that train. You can move that train without moving my body. You can move that train. No, you can move that train. You can move that train without moving my body.
David?
And it's about 25 to 3. We're standing in front of the ID building. What's up, David?
Oh, hey, I just got a ticket by, I guess it's, we call him Donut. We might as well call him Donut.
Do we know the name of this cop?
Yeah. Go-Nuts or Going?
Is he around? Is he on foot?
Yeah, oh, he's a big tall cop on the bicycle, okay. Blonde hair.
Huh, okay, maybe I'll notice him.
Yeah, well, I bummed a cigarette off a girl, who I always bum a cigarette off of. Past year, I've been bumming a cigarette off this girl.
And where was it?
Oh, down at the Metro.
Okay.
And then I bummed a cigarette off a girl, and I get arrested. Got a ticket for contributing furnishing tobacco to
a
minor.
Didn't you ask for the cigarette?
Yeah, I asked for
so
the cigarette.
So
I was bumming the cigarette off the girl, and yet I got ticketed for
officer,
furnishing.
Again, probably because he needed to pass the stupidity test to get into the,
yeah.
Into the officer training school.
Actually, I think what it is,
missed the point.
He was so excited to go through my pockets to see if he could find any pot. That was his big agenda.
Well, pot is a valuable substance, but going through your pockets may be the wrong approach to getting pot.
Right.
I mean,
I know.
If
he needs to get any pot, they're going to be opening up a cannabis club soon, and he can get his 215 card and get it like everybody else.
So what are you going to do about this? Do you have any witnesses to this particular incident?
Oh, yeah. I got all the girls that
and
were there.
And what is your name, Miss?
Mercedes.
And Mercedes, what did you see?
He bummed a cigarette off a friend of ours, and we walked down the street. We got about a block away, and the cop pulled up. Sir, you have to put your hands behind your back. Huh? For what?
Cuffs me up.
And he's all, well, I'm going to have to start looking through your pockets now. What's in that backpack? Yeah. And I was like, well, huh?
My backpack.
Yeah, it wasn't even his backpack. He was giving it to another girl. He's like, is there any marijuana in that backpack? And I said, no. And he's all, no. And he's all, well, all right, you can go, the girl with the backpack. And he's all, so, sir. What were you doing buying cigarettes for a minor? And he's all, I didn't buy a cigarette for her. I bummed a cigarette from her. He's all, well, it's not what it looked like to me. And he had him in cuffs, searching through every pocket, looking at his bugler like there was going to be pot at the bottom.
A cigarette paper, the bugler
then,
cigarette?
Yeah.
And then I had like a friend of mine's phone number on a card in my pocket.
Mm-hmm.
He pulls the card out. He's looking at my friend's phone number, saying, oh, Anthony, you know. Looking at his phone numbers and stuff, which is like, you know, prying into people's
violation
personal
of privacy, perhaps.
Yeah, violating people's personal rights to privacy.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think that the police department needs to pry into people's personal lives on the mall.
But they have so much fun doing it.
Yeah, well,
I've never personally had a problem with the cop down here until the other day.
And what happened then?
And I had to go and find his girlfriend to let her know that he was going to get arrested.
For
furnishing tobacco to a minor.
And when did this actually all happen?
Yesterday.
About what time?
About four. This is about four.
Mm-hmm. And so how long were you in cuffs?
Oh.
About 20 minutes, half an hour.
About a half an hour, sitting on the mall.
Well, this is a pretty serious offense, bumming a cigarette.
Oh, I know. Yeah.
You're supposed to buy cigarettes, not bum cigarettes.
Yeah, you can go down for that one, man.
Yeah. I mean, you know, you got to realize, we got a clean town here. We don't want your kind around here. You know?
I was born and raised in this town.
Oh, well,
been here since 1962.
Times have changed. Got your credit card with you?
It's like, yeah. If the property values hadn't gone up so much here, I'd still own a house.
Yeah, I hear you. Anything you want to add for Free Radio Santa Cruz?
Yeah, we need to have rent control because nobody can live in this town unless they're a millionaire.
Thank you, David. Anything you want to say?
I think you should just have a nice day.
Thank you. And where's
down in Nicaragua and El Salvador, bombs rain down once more to kill and maim. But this time I say no. This time I just have to go to try to stop the train that carries murder in my name. And you can't move that train. You can't move that train. You can't move that train without moving my body. Gonna say it again now. You can't move that train. You can't move that train. You can't move that train without moving my body. You can move that train. You can move that train. You can move that train without moving my body. You can move that train. You can move that train. You can move that train without moving my body.
Yeah, that's Mark Levy, and we're now going to be playing some selections from the first sleeping band protest of the season. That was the Park Your Dump Downtown and Let Folks Sleep in Your Ancient Rent-A-Wreck. And we had not a lot of vehicles. We had, I think, three or four at our maximum, all kind of dressed up and dolled up. My car had the Canfield rabbit on top of it, famous from the last election campaign. A huge Canfield bunny surveying, overseeing, and protecting the entire situation, a slumbering bunny, but slumbering during the day and on top of a vehicle, so that's legal. You see, the sleeping ban has very specific provisions. You can sleep before 11 o'clock at night, you can cover up with a blanket before 11 o'clock at night, but you can't lie down on any street in a downtown business district. So you have to lie down on a car. That was the rationale of our little protest. And we actually, particularly Becky Johnson, did a wonderful job of designing her hotel on wheels. It was impressive. It had paper curtains in the windows. It had two stories. Actually, she's here in the studio. Maybe she can give us a description. So, Becky, you kind of opened up a hotel there, and it didn't cost anything, right?
We can't say it didn't cost anything, because we had to keep feeding the meter. But up on the luggage rack on the roof, I had the penthouse, and then down inside the station wagon was the master bedroom.
Wow.
And you know why we call it the master bedroom?
I no.
That's where we had the bathroom.
Well, the one who has the bathroom masters the bedroom, I guess. I won't get into that at this time. The more difficult area.
Those mason jars have lots of purposes.
Yes. Well, you know, given the shortage of 24-hour restrooms, although I'm told that there have been a number of porta-potties opening up downtown, sprouting up, thanks to the Crone Crapper Commission, the task force on bathrooms set up by Christopher Crone, overseen by Matt Farrell, which actually had a meeting last week, which I wasn't able to attend. If any of the Crone Crapper Commission gang is listening in, and those are mostly merchants like John Lesher and Neil Coonerty, give me a call and let me know what's been happening with that body.
Yeah, the city council finally figured out that what goes in must come out.
Oh, now if only they could figure it out and place strategically some porta potties in areas where people actually need them, like Mission Street Extension, Harvey West, other areas where people actually sleep at night. Not the rich people, of course, but those who are outside. Anyway, I'm going to play you some selections from the protest before I do. And the protest, again, was more of a kind of a low-key organizing tool. We signed up folks. We're planning to really build for larger protests during the shopping season. We want to do, and for those of you who are interested and want to volunteer, do call in. That's HUF, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, that's throwing these sleeping ban repeal protests. We're looking to get the sleeping ban overturned and the camping ordinance overturned, in fact. The way to do that, we think, is to put the pressure on the glitzy merchants downtown who prey upon tourists and shoppers during the season of compassion, Thanksgiving and Christmas. We figure if there's a steady protest downtown during that season, then the merchants might pay some attention to the soft voices that they usually don't hear of people kind of suffering in the bushes as police go after them and give them $54 tickets and troll busters break their noses, smash their shins, and otherwise attack them with bottles, clubs, and rocks, as they've done to more than 24 homeless people since January, and actually have expanded the repertoire to go after youths downtown. That's been happening almost every Tuesday. I guess this last Tuesday was an exception. There wasn't, I did not hear of a reported case. Maybe we can get updates again from you listeners. Hopefully you'll keep us advised. Again, there's a protest to protest the execution, proposed execution of Mumia Abu-Jamal. His death warrant was signed yesterday by Governor Tom Ridge, and that's due to happen in December, but the protest is happening today, 6:30 town clock. It's been happening for about 20 minutes, I guess. Also, the 6:30 meeting of the Beach Flats Housing City Council Committee, I guess we'd call it, for want of a better name. That's at the trailer at 200 Raymond Street. They're going to be looking into affordable housing, land trust, Dolphin Lee, what to do with the Seaside Company's sort of scorched earth policy where it destroys residential housing in order to hope to buy it up as commercial property later. At 7 o'clock, by the way, for those of you interested, there will be a meeting of the Plaza Organizing Committee. That's the group that wants to take the Rittenhouse hole in the ground and turn it into a downtown plaza. Actually, that's one issue in which Mayor Byers and I see eye to eye, and that rhymes. That's 7 o'clock at the main library meeting room, Plaza Committee. 7:30 for the... It's now quiet back there. 7:30, there's a... If you haven't got a meeting mentality, you can always turn on the boob tube if you have cable and watch Voices from the Village. That's with the ineffable and, I don't want to say sometimes, senile Charlie Phillips. He's a good-hearted man and does some good stuff. Joe Grossman's on there. It's an hour's call-in show, and it's on the shelter crisis for homeless people. And so, again, there seems to be a convergence of opinion that come wintertime, there's going to be a bunch of people freezing their butts off, children that are going to be sick, mothers that are going to be sick out there, while the council does nothing. And I can tell you they're doing nothing because I have looked at every one of their agendas for the last 16 weeks, and there ain't nothing on there about shelter. Thank you very much. The county patted itself on the back when they learned that the armory was going to open up. Marty Wormhout bought herself a cigar and then disbanded the Winter Shelter Advisory Committee. And they had this hack, Sue Gilchrist, come down and give us a speech telling us somehow that there were some 400 shelter beds available in the county. Preposterously. There are 30 places for people to sleep during the summer, most of the fall and the spring, and there are about, if you really push it, maybe 200, 220 in the winter. But these puffed up figures so that bureaucrats can meet some sort of federal guideline by lying so they can get in on the consortium of care and get their, you know, hog on up, belly up to the trough and get federal funding really makes me ill. But if you really want to get the straight dope on that, and we'll take a little kind of aside on this, here's Becky Johnson, who's been studying this for several years.
Well, I just wanted to say that Sue Gilchrist, her presentation from the county about this consortium of care document that's supposed to be the definitive list of, you know, all the services and gaps for homeless people in Santa Cruz County. And first off, the documents are horribly flawed with just out-and-out fictional information on them, mostly overestimating the amount of shelter space and underestimating the number of homeless people needing that space. But I thought the quote that got to me was, she says, well, we've done all that we can. And so then they disbanded the entire winter shelter thing, which was only based on Governor Pete Wilson's had grown tired of homeless people being housed in the armories across the state and had issued mandates to cities that they start housing their homeless in the armories and that they start paying for it and that they would only be, and there was going to be a cutoff date when they couldn't house homeless people there at all. And so, and in order to have permission to use the armories, they had to have these winter shelter emergency committees formed at the county level. So that's why this committee formed, and now that Pete Wilson is in office anymore, and since they've done all that they can do, they disbanded.
And they declared that the problem was dealt with, pretty much. I think we should deal with it by requisitioning their houses. That's what I think. Anyway, the issue is going to be raised at Voices from the Village tonight at 7:30. That's on Channel 71. And the call-in number for 71, do you know the call-in number, Becky?
That's 425-4920.
It's 425-4920 for Voices from the Village. It begins at 7:30 on the issues of shelter. So if you like this show and you want to raise some issues about shelter, you might call that number. This is Free Radio Santa Cruz, by the way, in case you've forgotten, 96.3 FM. And I'm Bathrop Spear, Robert Norse. Studio line is open. Give us a call, 427-3772. We want to hear what you have to say. And in between our talking at you, we hope you'll talk back at us.
Go pasaran without moving our bodies. Go pasaran. Go pasaran. Go pasaran without moving our bodies. You can't move that train. You can't move that train. You can't move that train without moving my body. Can't move that train without moving my body.
And thank you, Mark Levy. Mark is not only a great singer and a fine satirist, he's a local artist who's concerned about civil rights. He actually composed a song about the sitting ban downtown. Neil Coonerty's Law, that's the man who wants to stop borders. I also, by the way, want to stop borders. Coonerty and I are on the same side on this issue, even though Coonerty bars me from his bookshop and has persuaded Georgiana's Cafe to bar me there as well. So, nonetheless, well, Mark Levy is a fine singer, and you're going to be hearing more from him. A lot of good stuff on the internet, and I wasn't able to read it all last time. I'm going to read some of it to you now. I work with a group called POST, Papers on the Street Together, and that's sort of an internet homeless news service talking about civil rights for homeless people. There's some real long stories, but I'm going to start with a short one. Mall shines bright, panhandling reduced, police intolerant customers chasing panhandlers away. This is by Julia C. Martinez from the Denver Post. And it's a story about a month and a half old, September 5th. Summer traditionally is the best time for sashaying down the 16th Street Mall to the tune of Brother, Can You Spare a Dime? But this summer, the panhandler melody murmured by people adorning downtown street corners, sidewalks, benches, and doorways has been drowned out by increasingly intolerant mall visitors and a beefed-up police squad bent on ridding the commercial and retail strip of the nuisance. The result is the number of panhandlers along the 12-block pedestrian mall has decreased slightly. More people are getting fed up, said Sergeant Bill Hoffman, head of the Downtown Police Motorcycle Unit, which patrols the mall along with officers on horseback and in squad cars. More people are willing to stand up and talk to us and sign complaints. We're getting panhandlers off the street faster. When people are willing to sign complaints and willing to say what the person did, it's easier to get them out of here. The higher number of complaints is due in part to a push by police to educate 16th century, I guess that's what they are actually, but it's 16th Street merchants and consumers about the law and about how to report violations. Hoffman said police have doubled the safety training programs held in people's offices. Police review behavior that might constitute a violation. For example, if panhandlers simply ask for money, they probably won't be arrested. Except in Santa Cruz, where if you ask for a dime after dark, you're up for a $162 ticket. Do it twice within 6 months, and you're up for 6 months in jail and a $1,000 fine as a possible maximum. But in Denver, according to our Denver Post staff writer, that's not the case. If panhandlers simply ask for money, they probably won't be arrested. But if you say no and they start cursing at you, it becomes a disturbance, Hoffman said. Or if they go into a store to panhandle, that could constitute trespassing. Ah, but not in Salinas, California, where a recent and very important panhandling case last spring held that a panhandler in a Chinese restaurant was simply engaging in First Amendment behavior and a very significant extension of First Amendment rights. Hasn't been tried here in Santa Cruz, but hey, Chinese food could be a nice, agreeable environment to do some panhandling. As the summer peaked, the number of young aggressive panhandlers in Denver was down by about one-third, Hoffman estimated. The young drifters who did come appeared to leave sooner than usual. We've had a policy of zero tolerance, Hoffman said. I think a lot of people just didn't come back. The city's older, more permanent population of panhandlers has remained fairly steady, but the heavy police presence has made them more cautious and low-key. Some people say they feel more pressure, said Tommy W. Lewers, executive director of the St. Francis Center, a day center for homeless people downtown, a day shelter, that is. There seems to be a push to not have homeless people around. On a warm Tuesday morning, veteran panhandler Selma was quietly collecting change near the corner of 16th and Glenarm. God bless you, have a nice day, she greeted from her wheelchair as people dropped quarters into a blue paper cup in her lap. Selma said she never harasses people and doesn't worry about being arrested. I collect about $30 a day, said Selma, who is missing part of one leg. I get what I need and then I go home. I don't stay out here all day. Neil McFarland, a manager at Fox Photo, said Selma often sits outside his shop, but he doesn't mind and doesn't think his customers mind. We say hello, goodbye, you're late today, McFarland said. Several blocks down the mall, near 16th and Curtis, Danny Vallejos has a different story. The shoeshine man has seen some unpleasant encounters between young aggressive panhandlers and noon-hour diners this summer. Vallejos, who owns a shoeshine kiosk in the center of the mall between Curtis and Arapaho streets, said he has watched teens follow people down the mall begging for money and cursing at those who refuse to give. It's not so much that they're panhandlers, Vallejos said, but the kids will make snide remarks and cuss at people, at customers, at people eating on the mall. They say they need money for marijuana research. Some people have gotten mad and there have been shoving matches. It's a waste of the city's money that people can't enjoy certain parts of the mall. That kind of scenario makes Patrick Carlisle avoid the mall, especially during the lunch hour. I used to be able to go out and enjoy it, said Carlisle, manager of Cobbler's Corner Shoe Store at 17th and Champa Streets. The last 5 to 6 years, it's been unbearable. I won't eat out there. You've got teenagers coming up and trying to bum a smoke. The 16th Street Mall is one of downtown's main attractions, a stopping point for people going to the theater, sporting events, museums, and shops. The police crackdown comes as foot traffic on the strip is soaring thanks to the influx of new residents and the arrival of Pavilions Shopping Center and other establishments. City officials want to keep it that way. Our downtown has always been viewed as one of the safest in the country, said Ben Kelly, spokesman for the Downtown Denver Partnership of Merchants and Property Owners. But there's a perception that the presence of homeless people or the youths that congregate in Skyline Park at 16th and Arapaho Streets is making downtown unsafe, he said, even though the crime rate has decreased 3 years in a row. So, interesting, this is the kind of an article that a pro Downtown Association person might have written for Santa Cruz in the early 90s when they proposed the anti-homeless, anti-panhandling laws. They talk about nasty behavior, but that behavior is already covered by assault laws, blocking the sidewalk, and so forth. What they really want to do is get rid of the appearance of poverty and the reminder of misery that's downtown. That's the point. And that's really what they're doing. Because, you see, crime is decreasing anyway. And people's perception of the downtown being unsafe is not accurate. And, in fact, you're taking opinions from selected people and not from, I would claim, the majority. Nobody likes nasty and aggressive panhandlers. That's something that is appropriately dealt with. If somebody pursues you down the street, that's something else. But to harass people, as Officer Malate has recently done, for simply holding up a sign, even in violation of our own city codes, is an example of the kind of get rid of the homeless, homeless cleansing mentality that is a kind of a sickness that is here in this town and is in other towns and is often kind of focalized or concentrated in the areas where you have tourist attractions, conservative residents, people who are concerned about the appearances of things and making money, making money, making money. That becomes a priority over all things. That was an article I just read from the internet, but actually from the Denver Post from September. And it had some interesting parallels between Denver and Santa Cruz. Though Denver, of course, is a much larger city, but the attempt to paint panhandlers as some sort of evil, aggressive creatures, and these laws as benign regulations is something that Kennedy and Coonerty and Matthews were all up to, including Rutkin. They were all doing it. Even Byers voted for almost all these regulations except for the sitting law, which she voted against, to her credit. Well, stay with us. There's lots more coming up on Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3. Call in, 427-3772, and we'll talk back at you.
Either from that Peggy Seeger song, great song, haven't heard it recently, but instead we have a guy we've heard perhaps a little too much of, Skidmark Bob Duran.
Too much?
Well, some people feel that you're just a little too much.
I am?
Well, there are some who claim that... What are you calling for, Bob? Give us the dope here, or give the dope the dope.
I don't have any dope to give you, but I'll let you know that there's, God, there must be around 200, 250 people at the clock tower right now. It almost looks like New Year's Eve in a way. There's tons of people out there for Mumia since his death warrant got signed yesterday by Governor Thomas Ridge.
Is the police department represented perhaps with a crying towel section for Officer Faulkner's widow?
Well, they're out in front of the Cafe Royale. There's Officer Bynes and Sergeant Sanders and a couple of motorcycle officers, like five or six officers. They're all ready to follow the march, wondering where it's going to go. It's going to be a huge march, so I'm going to try to see if I can keep an eye on things and see what happens during this march, because they're going to probably take over the whole downtown area marching down there, because usually a lot of marches don't get as many people as this right now.
Wow.
So there's quite a few people
there.
So
you're not exaggerating. 200 people is
a lot
of people.
Plus there's more and more people. I see crowds of people walking that way. So.
Wow, and do you have any idea what route they're going to take for those who want to
come? I assume they're going straight downtown. I don't know. And then from there, I have no idea. Maybe to the new police station again with the leaky windows.
Hey, the new police station could, as I've said before, make an admirable homeless shelter.
I would think so.
I think Mumia would be with you if you guys decided to liberate that building.
We could arm the homeless and have them learn how to shoot weapons in the new shooting range.
I think the homeless are completely armless.
But for a $14 million police station with leaky windows, I don't think it's much worth it. But then again, just a few leaky windows, I think homeless people will be okay with.
Leaky windows or leaky minds, I guess that's the question.
But I guess the cops, it isn't good enough for them.
Let me ask you this, Bob. You were part of the old Cop Watch. I know a new Cop Watch has been forming. Have you been advising people about how to proceed in forming Cop Watch here in Santa Cruz?
I'm working on it. I don't have a lot of extra time like I used to. I have a job and a kid and all these kinds of things. Although I do cop watch quite often, and often I just happen to be there when things are happening, even with my young son, when cops are throwing people down and doing stuff, and I have to yank my kid out of the way so they won't get squashed by the officer throwing the guy down on the ground, these kinds of things. I do observe, keep an eye out and an ear out for what police are doing. I'm doing it right now.
Do you know much about the new cop watch group that's forming? Have they been in touch with you? Or?
I know a little bit about it, yeah. I haven't been able to attend a meeting yet, though.
I know that Wednesday at 7:30 is their usual meeting time at the Rise Zone, 224 Walnut, for those who are interested. And also, what about Night Patrol? I've heard that this is a group concerned about fighting troll busting, the beating of poor and homeless people or young people on the streets. They want to stop that from happening. Have you heard much about them?
I can't tell you anything about that either, because I don't know. I know that there's been some people going out and keeping an eye out on things.
Big dummy. What good are you?
I don't know. I don't know. Just keep that fucking radio station going.
Yes, sir. Man.
But that's all.
Well, I guess you do. That's true. You are one of the main kingpins behind this illegal radio operation. Well, I'm told that there are no leaders, but there's some who do more work than others. That's for sure.
Well, I just want to let folks know that nobody's marching yet, so there's still time to head on down to the clock tower. We need to take this thing to the streets. I interviewed Ramona Africa yesterday on the phone. She had the same idea of taking it to the streets. Now it's getting to that point where we got to free this man.
Not to mention our own political prisoners.
Yes. I'm sure they're all present as well.
You've got drug prisoners galore in the Santa Cruz jail who are there essentially for victimless crimes. You have people facing prosecution like the Santa Cruz Five.
And most of them free radio programmers, by the way.
Well, at least we'll get rid of that group.
Exactly. Well, anyway, there'll be more time slots open. No, I'm just kidding. That's
indeed,
really bad.
Indeed. Please call me up again if anything new develops, particularly racy, exciting, or even just interesting.
I'll keep an eye on things.
Thanks, Bob.
Bye.
On this very day, the world has been a busy place. On this very day, on March the 25th, in 1896, the Olympic Games were launched in France. A poor young Greek hitched up his pants and ran the marathon. Do you want to know what he won? A year's free grub and free shoe shines until his life was done. On this very day, on this very day, the world has been a busy place. On this very day, 38 years ago, I want you all to know, I met his dad met me, we got our kids and they got we. And this big handsome man, well, thought of him again, in a basement room in